This is the Paul Gough Audio Experience, business lessons for physical therapists. My name is Paul Gough, former professional soccer physical therapist turned successful business owner and best-selling author from the UK. Each week, we answer your questions and bring you an inspiring story or person from the global physical therapy community. This show is dedicated to sharing with you everything you need to know to become hugely successful in private practice. Thanks for joining me today. Now let the class begin. All right. We're live. We are beaming all over the world. Natty, have you got us on your Facebook, Natty? If you can, share us out. Tell your friends that you are about to be interviewed. They think that we're going to talk business, but we're really going to talk the most important topic in the world, Liverpool Football Club. We're going to talk real football on this episode today. Not soccer. We're going to talk football. We're going to get into a little bit of that as the show goes on. But before we came on, we were talking about another very important subject as well, as Liverpool getting into the Champions League final. Johnny Depp.
Yes.
For those of you who don't know, Natty's obviously a big Johnny Depp fan and is following the court case there very closely. So
you're a big pirate fan. How are you not a Johnny Depp fan?
I like, don't get me wrong, I like Pirates of the Caribbean. I do. I like the concept of it. And I like Johnny Depp in that movie because he was a little bit of a rebel, and I kind of quite like that. Didn't follow the rules, you know. I see myself, maybe we're kindred spirits, me and Johnny. But with regards whatever's going on in the courtroom right now, I'm sure at some point we can bring that up in the next hour, and I've got my thoughts on it.
What would you rather watch, Johnny Depp court or politics? Clearly I know you don't want to watch any of it, right? But you have to pick one. Break the arm or the leg. Pick one thing.
We'll get into it. We'll get to those very serious questions over the next over the next 60 minutes or so. But yeah, we're live. It is, what day is it? Friday, the 6th. I'm here in Orlando. Natty Bandersack joins us from New Jersey. And we're going to get in today to talking about Natty's, what I think is one of the most incredible journeys, certainly one of the fastest journeys to success as a business owner, a relatively new startup a couple of years back, to the size of the business you've got today, and the responsibility that you've now got of running a practice and stepping back from patient care and managing people and losing one or two people and then replacing one or two people and all of that type of thing we're going to get into. So welcome everybody. We are on Facebook, we are on YouTube. Where are we at? YouTube, Instagram. Are we on Instagram? YouTube, yep. Instagram, LinkedIn, somewhere else. I think we're connected to somewhere else. We've found this really cool, fancy platform, and it puts us all over the world, basically. So we're going to have a lot of fun for the next hour. So, Natty, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. Happy to be here.
It's great to have you. You're number one on my list. I'm not allowed to say this.
Wow.
I shouldn't say this.
I love it.
But is Natty the first person that is on that list of podcast guests for Q2 up there? Was Natty. So it was Natty, number one. I'm very excited to do this with you. And
I'm happy to go after Nikki, because Nikki podcast was great.
Yeah, she did good. Nikki is fantastic. We've got a few more Brits lined up as well. We were talking today about maybe letting one or two of the Scots on the podcast as well. But that Steve McLean listens to this podcast, and he's Scottish, and he's got a good story, but he's Scottish, and that's the problem. It's like, I don't know if I want the French on before the Scots on this podcast. So, Steve, if you're listening, maybe we'll make an exception for Steve. He does like to come to England now and again, so at least we can, you know, kind of forgive him actually for being Scottish. So yeah. So what's going on, Natty? What's good? Tell us about your life. Tell us what's happening. What's good now?
Nothing much. Standard New Jersey weather. But you know, so far,
Nothing much.
I mean,
come on. Let me correct that.
Okay.
What's good in Natty's life?
Well, everything is going swimmingly, right? And you know, I feel like this is pretty much the first summer that we get to have, you know, post pandemic. And I'm just really excited to see how things are going to go with the clinic, because the past 2 years, we obviously been, you know, running through mud. And for the first time, we get to kind of like, all right, let's see what it feels like to actually run what I now perceive as a legitimate business.
Yeah.
So I think the biggest, mindset change for me that will lead to this point was obviously now I feel like I'm a business owner rather than just a physical therapist.
Yep.
So I'm just, the something that's really good is I'm just excited. I'm really excited to see for the first time, like how my business will do, how my staff will be and how I am, how I would be as a leader.
Good for you. So we've come through COVID and it's exciting times. You've had 2 years of being locked up because I know you guys have been locked up quite brutally up there.
Yeah.
And you're choosing to spend your newfound freedom watching the Johnny Depp courtroom case. Is that kind of what we're getting at? So what's the deal? Come on, let's get into this Johnny Depp. You wanted to talk about it. What's the deal? Whose fault? Are we going to get sued? Are we allowed to say this shit? Like, I know this.
As long as the jurors are not listening to this podcast live, I think we're okay. they're supposed to be staying away from social media. I think it's just, you know, bad combinations. Two bad people getting together. Nothing good about that. But you know, my wife's enjoying this because she's a psychologist and she loves the forensic psychology aspect of this, right?
Yeah.
And you know, for me, as I'm watching this, I'm just like, all right, well, listen, these people obviously from the outside looking in haven't made at some point. And then when you start diving down into their history and all of this stuff, you're like, man, like obviously they don't have it all together. And it's kind of going back, like everybody has some sort of childhood trauma and parents issues, and you know, everybody has their own baggage, but you know, your outside success doesn't correlate to how you feel about yourself, you know, as a person. So to me, it's always going back to like, hey, maybe take care of how you feel first, and then all the other external stuff, you know, will line up by itself. If that's what you're looking for anyway, if that's important to you.
It's fascinating. And what we were, you know, my little 30-second comment before we came on, I for a long time, I've spoken about this, the idea that it's one thing to be rich and it's one thing to be admired externally. And all of us fall into that trap of looking at somebody quite presumptuously, quite ignorantly, mm-hmm. at somebody with a large social media following who is famous for being on TV, you know, mm-hmm. famous for movies and revered all over the world and has got followers and fans and looks fantastic and, you know, is hundreds of millionaires in, you know, probably in Johnny Depp's case. Mm-hmm. And yet their lives on the inside are rotten. And there's so much discontent there. There's so much anger. There's so much frustration. There's so much restlessness. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the problems that we allow in society is we idolize, we make these people that we follow and these people that we look at and we aspire to be like, and we know nothing about them other than mm-hmm. that he's a good actor, right? And and this is the bit that I wrestle with all the time. I'm like, it's like the, you know, the Will Smith thing a few weeks back.
Yeah,
it's like, how pathetic, right? Well, how. Mm-hmm. How is these guys ever allowed to be influencing our lives in the first place, right? Mm-hmm. You've got this mob of Hollywood actors who are trying to preach to everybody how to behave and how to act and how to live mm-hmm. their lives and push their opinions down their social media channels. And they're good actors. All they are is good actors. That's it. Mm-hmm. Like, do you know what I mean? The majority of them are just very good actors. And listen to the word, they act for a living. They act. How could you possibly take that courtroom seriously, right? When it's two actors. Like, if you were a juror, I'd be sat there going, well, is this Johnny Depp the actor or is this Johnny Depp? Like, because, you know, like every time he laughs or he giggles or he smiles or he cries, it's like, is he acting here? Like the Will Smith thing, is that an act? They're actors. And yet what we are allowed to do is look at them externally mm-hmm. and make a judgment on whether or not we should be A, influenced by them, and B, whether or not we want to aspire to be them. And mm-hmm. that's where it goes wrong. Then you start hearing about their lives and you do realize that they've got all of the money in the world and all of the access to private jets and everything that they want. And they're still very, very unhappy. And mm-hmm. will probably, sadly, in both of their cases, they'll never find contentment because they're looking in the wrong place. But society has a wicked way of allowing us to repeat that mistake where we are glorifying and glamorizing a certain way of living
mm-hmm.
almost, would it be an ideology? Idealizing
mm-hmm.
a way of living that promotes nothing but unhappiness. And yet we continue to do it. Even when somebody gets that level of wealth, that level of money, mm-hmm. we continue to promote that's still the way to go in order for you to be successful.
Yeah.
But you're watching these people, and as I watch it, it's the only lesson that you can learn in life, or that there's always a lesson to learn. The only lesson to be learned from this thing is thank God that crap isn't, you know, or hope to God that crap isn't going on in your head or your, you know, your life on a daily basis. So there's always lessons to be learned, that's for sure.
Yeah, no. Yeah, I mean, I'm taking away from it. And again, we work with a lot of pro athletes, and I'll tell them, I'm like, listen, man, you see how this could happen? This could happen to anyone. This can happen to Johnny Depp. Why not you? So you got to be careful, you know, and obviously we have younger athletes that we work with who are in college, and at some point they're going to be professional athletes. So I use this as like a talking point every time I see them.
Dude, it's happening to everybody. 9 out of 10 people, right? And we can all dress it up and wrap it up. Mm-hmm. 9 out of 10 people are living quiet lives of despair. That's it. Mm-hmm. This is just being played out in a courtroom. I heard that phrase years ago and I didn't understand it. My goodness, now I see it everywhere. People mm-hmm. are living quiet lives of despair. And what it basically means is they're looking around at everybody else who's lauding it, that their lives are this, and they've got this, and they've got these beautiful kids, and they've got this fantastic house, and mm-hmm. look at me, I've got this job, and I've got a pay rise, and blah, blah, blah. But they go to bed on a night and can't work out why at 40-odd-year-old, they're still miserable, they're still unhappy, they're still insecure, they're still frightened, they're still worried about being judged by people, they're still living a life that's not their own and is mm-hmm. really being made up by most of their decisions coming from what somebody else wants them to do mm-hmm. or how they assume they'll make somebody else feel if they do something. And every night and every day this thing goes on, and their only solution to that problem is the one that got them in the problem in the first place, mm-hmm. which is to go and get more success, more money, a new job, a new car, a new house, new clothes. Now, I'm not saying all of those things are not important, but I'm saying without the right control of why you're buying or getting those things or trying to aspire to those things, you're going to be in hell. Like mm-hmm. you'll just be super rich but living in hell, which most millionaires are, most multimillionaires are, which again, what I love about being a business owner, and nobody take this the wrong way, which, you know, kind of brings us into the conversation, what I love about being a business owner is we have to think for a living. We have to critically think about our lives. We have to think about the decisions we're making, or it certainly puts us into positions to do it. You know, we're not just showing up on a movie set and acting, getting millions of dollars and then expecting life to kind of play out a certain way. We're thinking for a living. We're developing critical thinking skills, how to think strategically. We have to develop an intrinsic view of our lives to reflect on problems and challenges and situations that happen to us. And if we're not doing that as business owners, what the hell is the point of being in business in the first place? Because we can conclude that all the money in the world, i.e. the depths, this, you know, this fast, that's not going to give most people what they want.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's my little rant about Johnny Depp and whatever she's called anyway.
Ever heard. Yeah.
Ever heard. I'm going to get into the podcast with some rapid fire questions.
Okay.
You ready? Did you listen to Nikki's?
Yeah, I did. I'm like, so man, these are tough questions. Yeah.
Right. What makes Natty laugh?
Good old comedy.
Examples? Which one? Who's your favorite?
So I love Frasier.
Fantastic.
old TV show.
Love stuff like that. What's your current obsession?
Right now I'm all about, like you, like Elon Musk. I'm big into him right now.
Interesting. What's the one thing that you can never live without?
Live without, let's see. I mean, probably some sort of gym access.
Natty, you're supposed to say your wife, right? Like, let's put that one out there.
That's true. She's not listening.
Can somebody send her this recording, please?
Yeah, there you go.
Let's put Natty in a little bit of a blackmail situation. Has he gone? Is something there? Has he disappeared? He's been cut off. Is he coming back in? We've lost Natty. he's been summoned by his significant other, I suspect.
All right, I think I'm back.
Was that we thought your wife must have, like,
I know,
all of a sudden made a quick phone call, and it's like, let's get Natty.
Well, I can argue my way out of that one for sure. You know,
describe yourself in three words.
Three words. Hardworking, determined, and problem solver.
Yeah, it's funny, as I think about that sometimes with the clients, I mean, I would agree with all of that, but I think you are one of the most energetic, fun, loving guys that I've ever had the pleasure or privilege to be around. And I
appreciate
say that,
that
lightly. So don't underestimate how good of a quality that is to have. Best piece of advice you've ever got?
You either make money or you make excuses.
Love it. 80s music or 90s?
80s rock.
Any particular band?
I mean, anything 80s genre, I would go Motley Crue. I think that's good.
Interesting. Yeah. Good. I like
good
it.
Good work on music.
Florida or California?
Oh, Florida. I'm not going nowhere near close. Nowhere close to California.
Sorry for all of the Californians who listen to this, but I suspect Florida's going to win every single time. All right, here's one for you. New York or London?
Well, I've never been to London, so I'm going to say New York.
Harry Potter or Mickey Mouse?
Oh, Harry Potter.
Amazon or a good old-fashioned shopping mall?
Amazon, because I value my time.
Go shopping with your wife or spend it doing marketing for your clinic?
I'll do marketing. But the marketing will lead to more shopping.
Correct. That's what I say. That's what I say to Natalie. That's exactly how it works. Cause and effect. Patient care or sit down and do your company finances?
Finances now. Yep.
Hire or fire?
Fire.
So you prefer firing over hiring. That's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, now I do.
Attend a shoulder pain course or do a business finance course?
Business finance.
And the last question, my absolute favorite. If there's one politician on the planet you could slap, who would it be? And you're only allowed one.
I was going to say Chuck Schumer.
Come on, then you're out another. No, I'm only joking. We're going to find out. We're going to find out people's fun with this. Who did Nikki say? Nikki said Boris, I think, didn't she? Did she say Boris Johnson last week? But yeah,
it's all... I thought she said something else. Oh, I mean, someone else.
There was. That's right. There was a guy, Rees Smogg, Jacob Rees Smogg, I think he's called. He's quite famous in England. He's very similar to Schumer in England. He's that type of guy. So right, let's get into some of the more serious questions. That's a little bit of the behind the scenes as to who the person that we are we're talking to today. So really what we're doing in this podcast, we're trying to expose what it takes to step back. A lot of people start practices. A lot of people put their name above the door, but then what we find is they get stuck, they get trapped. The dream is to start the business, but really, as the dream gets bigger, what we really want is a business that we can come and go from. We can head off somewhere for 3 days and come back and the business still runs. We can head to Europe for 2 weeks or 3 weeks, or we can just walk away from the practice completely and still make the same money and live a nice life. Mm-hmm. That is what this whole podcast is about, the CEO series, stepping back from patient care. Hence, we're talking to people who have done that or are on their way to doing it or, kind of halfway doing it, of which you are. So we're going to kind of talk around that type of topic as the next half an hour goes on. But tell us about the business then. How did you, how did you get started? Give everybody a background as to how did you get started in business and what does the business look like today?
There you go.
Am I back?
What
does the business look like today?
The business started in 2018, which is me in a closet somewhere. Now we have 11 staff. We have two locations, one main location, one satellite location.
Tangerine, just so we've got some context, obviously, New Jersey.
Yeah, I'm in East Hanover, New Jersey.
Yeah.
And Susquehanna, New Jersey, which is a satellite right next to Randolph, New Jersey. I can't say that town, so I always say Randolph. We started, again, like I said, in a small CrossFit gym, which is me, and now we grew into a 5,600 square foot headquarters that we have strength and conditioning as well. Now we have four clinical staff on board. We have one clinical staff on the satellite clinic, and then we have an operational manager, marketing assistant, two front desks, one SDR, one content creator. So we are building a solid team. So it came a long way.
You've done amazing in such a short period of time. And that's why I said at the start, I think of all of the clients I've been lucky enough to work with for the last few years, you'd certainly be in the top five for the speed and the pace at which you've gone at over the last couple of years since I've known you. Tell us about the successes then you've had recently. Could be profit, could be hiring, could be sales, reduction in treatment hours. What successes are you proud of recently?
So what I'm really proud of is, being able to reduce my hours in treating, because that's allowed me to do the scaling and the hiring.
Yeah.
Right. So it's a cause and effect. So because I'm able to reduce my hour in treating, I can go and recruit some, like, you know, some of my key members, like my ops manager. And then from there, I can really train her, help her recruit some more people. And then from there, once we have good people, then we can start scaling by taking me out some more as far as like clinical hours.
I love this. And it's such an important point to kind of ponder at this moment in time where there's a labor shortage in almost every market. No matter what it is, everybody thinks it's just happening in accounting. Or like, I was at a conference in Dallas these last few days, and the guy put on the screen a survey to fill out. What was your number one problem? People, strategy, execution, or cash? 94% of people in the room said people. Mm. Everybody, doesn't matter what it is, what business, what country, everyone's going through it. And here's how I see the problem getting worse. I always think whenever there's a problem in your life, the first question is not, what do I do to solve it? The first question should be, how could I make this worse?
Mm-hmm.
So most people start with, I've got a problem. Shit, I need to fix it. I prefer to start with, I've got a problem. How could this get even worse?
Mm-hmm.
And the problem that I see right now, right, let's keep it within our profession, the PT profession. The problem I see is people, and it's whether it's getting marketers, it's getting PTs, it's getting admin, it's getting finance people, bookkeepers, whatever. There's just not as many of them around. So how could that get worse? How could an already bad situation get worse? It'll get worse by not giving something which required time in the first place even more time to get it right.
Mm-hmm.
Because what is happening right now, I suspect you're going to watch clinics go through almost like a hamster wheel of hiring and firing. It'll just be every couple of months. And that's primarily happening because there isn't time allocated to the recruitment, which means it's get one, give me one, anybody will do. That probably isn't going to work out. So there's more time wasted that wasn't available in the first place on a decision that inevitably went wrong because there's no time invested in it, that led to even less time being available for the next hire, and on and on and on and on this thing will go. And so the magic of what you've said there is that as you start to step back from patient care, one of the first things that you do is you'll commit more time to staff and to people, recruitment, to ensure that you get more chance or a higher chance of the right people coming into the business, which reinforces the decision that you've made and gives it the best possible chance of it actually working, which was to step back from patient care in the first place. But the people listening to this, 99% that want to be in your shoes, they can't figure out how to spend time hiring because they don't have time to hire. Mm-hmm. And yet when they get their hires, it's then that they've got the time to get better hires and to grow the company. So where did you get the courage from, I guess, to step back and start to think like that?
Well, I mean, obviously being part of the CEO group has been a tremendous help in my growth and my way of thinking. And just seeing all my peers going through the same thing, that is all coming down to the people, right? That everyone has people problem at some point. So for me, what I really would love to do is do more marketing. But I can't do marketing if I can't hire someone to replace me in patient care.
Yeah.
Right. So I just kind of like, all right, here's my goals. I need to be able to do this. How do I do that? All right. Well, I need to have someone fill my role. All right. So in order for me to fill my role, then I have to go hire people. How about I just hire people that can help me hire people? So then that solves a lot of problems. But I just knew that with my overall mission is I want to help as many people as possible, right? I only have two hands, so I need more people, right? And that's I want to help other PTs who's in the profession that are burned out and they don't have an ideal place to work for. So to me, there are good people out there. They just don't have the correct setting to work in. And I would like to say that a clinic that I created is an environment that if I were a new grad, I would want to work here, right? If I were someone that works in a current PT clinic or an office setting, I want to work here.
Love that.
Right? Not because we have fun and all of that stuff, but because they have a chance to actually be successful at their job. You know, yeah, we have a lot of laughs, but, you know, we also do a lot of hard work.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think it's very underspoken about the idea that as a boss, you can get so much satisfaction and contentment back to the, you know, the beginning of the podcast where we're, you know, we're looking at Johnny Depp's or Will Smith's, and just because they're rich and living in Hollywood, we assume that they've got contentment and that they're calm and, you know, they're living a nice settled life internally. And, you know, most of them are not, right? They're not because they haven't worked on it. Simple as that. Like, you know, I can tell you, unless you're a freak, one in a million, it is, you know, living that type of life. But the majority of us aren't, because, you know, it's not getting worked on. Mm-hmm. And as you evolve as a leader and as a boss, you start to get great satisfaction and contentment on or out of the idea that you're developing people. You're growing people, quite literally. You're not growing a department. I always think I'm not here to grow a department. I'm not here to put like 16 people in a job. That's not my job, right? Like I'm not into any of that shit where I'm like trying to be a superhero to communities and all of that stuff. I'm not, right? I know what I'm capable of, and I know what you know, what I'm trying to do from being in business. Never forget, it's always about maximizing value or profit or whatever you want to call it for the ultimate shareholder, which is you, by providing world-class service for your customers. And that's as far as a business, in my humble opinion, should ever think of itself. But within that is undoubtedly the satisfaction that comes from developing good people. And it's an absolute happy byproduct of running a successful business and being a business owner, is that people come into your world, and whenever they leave, just make it likely or more likely that they've left better. And whatever way that is, they've left a better marketer, they've left more confident, they've left just a better human being, they've just got better habits or standards, or they've just believed in themselves a bit more. I think as a boss, if you start to create a business with that in mind, you become more encouraged to hire people because you get more satisfaction out of it. And invariably, people do leave you better. They still leave you. They always will. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, that's inevitable. But just make sure when they leave good people, and better than when you found them, if you like. And I think it's a fair trade that allows the business owner to, instead of thinking of staff as, you know, pain in the ass or like, which most business owners do, you know, they just, they don't want to talk to their staff, and they're not grateful for them and whatever else. It's like they're just an expense. But I think if you switch that to, I love being around people, I love working with them, and I want to see them grow and I want to see them develop, I think simultaneously you get satisfaction from it. The business is going to be better. You work with happier people, and it's just going to be a cool place that people want to work from. So I absolutely love that.
Yeah. And I know that, you know, I can't judge whether they get better as a person, but I know that they'll get a better understanding of who they are.
Yeah.
Right. If it doesn't work out, then they understand like maybe this role is not for me. So at least they gain that insight. Because, you know, if you ask someone like, what is it that you want? That's a loaded question. People would be like, yeah, I want, they would name things first. And then if you ask it, well, if you have all that, what is it you actually want? Then it's get really deep. Yeah. Or most of the time they don't even know what they don't want. Right. So if you come obviously into myokinetics and then things didn't work out, at least you kind of know like, hey, this is a kind of setting not for me. Maybe it's too much pressure, right? Maybe the accountability is a little bit too high. I can't do this. I don't need people to be breathing down on me. And not that we're breathing down on people, but when you're training someone, you want them to be successful. Yeah. You do have to have some sort of oversight.
I love it. What are the challenges you've run into then, as you look to be less involved with either the patients or just the day-to-day running of the business?
I think the main challenge would be keeping myself accountable in having the one-on-one meetings, having the conversation, you know, still having good communication with each of the key team members, right? Because once you start, you know, I feel like in business, like if I go 2 days without talking to either my ops manager, my head DT, my marketer, it feels like a week. Right. So to me, I'm like, obviously time blocking is huge. So I'll make sure like every 2 weeks we do our scorecard. We'll make sure, hey, let's catch up. Let's see what's going on. Am I putting too much on you? And you know how it is. I have a lot of good ideas, but I just need to prioritize them. I don't want to overwhelm my staff with certain things. Right. And I want to have that opportunity to say, hey, by the way, the thing I'm giving you, that's not a priority. I need you to do this. Focus on that, then we can focus on that.
Yeah.
So that's the challenge. But now I'm getting in a groove. Like I know every 2 weeks things are already blocking out, right? I know I have certain meeting on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And that's been a huge help for me. But before I was running all over the place.
Yeah. I love that. It's it's an interesting paradox, if you like, between, and I've just had this conversation with somebody this morning along these lines, that one of the things as a business owner you have to be careful of is, and this sounds daft, managing people, right? Where you're headed to now as a leader of a company requires to be able to get there and stay there that you hire people who don't need managing, right? So let me explain this. This is a little bit counterintuitive. Ideally, you don't want to be hiring people and reporting to people that need your managing, right? They need your leading of them. And the two are very different. That as the company grows, you'll get to the point, and you know, you're already headed there with the run rate that you're at, you'll realize that actually it's less about Natty being in on a Monday and a Wednesday, and you'll kind of let go, or you'll need to get beyond where you are now. You'll need to let go of the routine, because you're not the manager, and the manager's going to need the routine, and the manager's going to need the one-on-ones, and the manager's going to need to be there on a Wednesday and a Friday for the staff. But Natty can be wherever he wants. And in the end, the manager is doing the managing and Natty's doing the leading. So it's like, here's the big picture. Here's the vision. Here's where we're going. Here's where we're headed. Roadblock, no problem. Smash it down. Challenge, no worries. Let's go. All right, staff, who do we need? How much do we have we got to pay? Fantastic. What do we need to start charging to pay that type of price? Like, that's Natty leading the company versus falling into a little bit of a trap of managing people, like managing the manager. That makes sense.
Yeah.
And like, I know the run rate you're at, and with this number of staff now, you're heading towards the that situation where what's got you to this point is great, and you've got that structure and you've got that sort of early managing of the manager, but eventually you've got to get to that point where you go, I'm not managing you. I don't need to speak to you every day at 9 o'clock, and I don't even need a routine call with you at 9:30. Like, I'm off. I'm a free spirit. I'm thinking about what we're going to do next. I'm looking at another premises. I'm thinking about our vision, our 5-year plan, our philosophy, or whatever. Like, whatever. You've just got to know that they're doing the managing of the people, if you like. And that's a little thing that I've watched happen, where people can get stuck in managing managers rather than leading managers. The manager is the one that manages the sort of subordinates, if you like, underneath, you know, your front desk or your admin or your whoever, your PTs. But Natty's got to get to that point of he's leading and everybody's following, you know, and everybody's following Natty.
Yeah. And I mean, that's absolutely 100% correct. And, you know, I'm getting to a point where I'm talking to like three people, really. That's my key players that I can count on them to do stuff for me.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, as I look to develop more leaders in my team, right, that's when I can slowly start taking a step back. I mean, I just booked a Euro trip for almost a month in June. So, you know, I'm super excited about that, just to see, hey, let's see how things are going. Right.
England, you coming to England? Is it booked?
I'm still working on that. I'm working on it.
Move it to the dunk column.
Yep.
I'd love to see you in London. Yeah.
Yes. Oh my God. Me too. Yeah. So it's super excited just to see where we're heading, right? And obviously, you know, I was having another conversation with, again, another mastermind member, Jerry, and we were just talking about, like, you know, in my guts, I feel like I'm doing all the right things. And right now I just have to wait. I mean, I'm watering the plant. I just need to see grow, and it's just going to take time. So that's all I'm waiting for. I'm just going to keep doing what I'm doing and see where it takes me.
Good for you. Talk to me then about leadership. What have you learned about that over the last 2 or 3 years? What mistakes have you made? What are your thoughts on leadership now? And how have you had to evolve as a leader from just a guy that opened up a clinic and had probably somebody answering their phone, you know, your phone, to where you are today, managing 10-11, leading 10-11 people?
Well, I mean, that one is huge. Is because, you know, to be a good leader, you have to really be a good person yourself first. So it's a lot of self-reflection on my end. I have to obviously dive deep down to see, like, what am I doing it for? What my end goals, do all this stuff. But then really the biggest thing that I learned from 2018 to now is that we're just transitioning from running the business, or me leading it, as a family style business. Right. So I grew up, we had a family restaurant. So with family restaurant, No one's keeping anyone accountable. You just kind of hire people because they know they can do the job. And then you just kind of tolerate it and you put up with it. And then, but when you get to a certain point where you want to scale and you want to be more professional, you want to keep people more accountable, people don't like that, right? Yeah. So I have to really evolve myself, say, hey, all right, what am I going to do? Like, and the notion that like the business of family, you know, I had to get rid of that because it's really not, it's the place for people to be professional and grow professionally that can help them on their personal life, right? You know, and I think it's great that you have that kind of relationship with your staff where you can help them like, hey, I know you got something going on in your personal life. Can I help you adjust something? But I still need you to be able to do X, Y, and Z. And to me, you know, that takes a lot of courage, you know, firing some people to get us to where we are right now. And that's, to me, that was more on myself, like just learning to create boundary, what I would accept and what I don't accept. And then just going back to taking my personal core value and infuse it with my work core value, my company core values, and then really drive that home and make that part of our culture rather than going to, you know, you speak on this all the time. It's like, we're not a tech company. I'm not going to go, like, we'll have tacos, but I'm not going to go every Taco Tuesday. That's not what we do. We don't have cold brew on tap. We don't have any of that. Right. And, you know, and all, I mean, I think the biggest scam for me was like all these leadership books.
Yeah.
That's all they speak about. Right. I feel like all the people, and I feel like I was lied to, all the people that wrote all these leadership books is like, all right, you just got to be friendly with the staff. You just got to do this and that. But that's not how it works. Cause then, you know, people are people. Sometimes, you know, they, you know, we're selfish being for a reason. Right. So, yeah. You know, as a business, you know, people, some people might put their own needs ahead of the business. No one's going to do like what you like what I would do, what you would do, right? It's your own business. So I have to come out of that. And I have to be a little bit more stern just because these are the standard that I will not tolerate anymore. Yeah. And that's just part of, you know, me working on myself, being more comfortable with who I am and what I'm willing to accept.
I often think about those books, and I know what you know who and what type of books you're referencing there. We're all seduced into the big start with why and all of these sort of leadership books that have made the rounds over the years, right? And it's in often a good place to start, and many of us did. I did, and I read the book, and it, you know, a lot of, I'm not saying that exact book, but just generally these books, it's like, it doesn't make sense. And one of the reasons it doesn't. It's all theory. It's all theoretical. Most of those books are not written by people that have managed a team of 20 people in the trenches. Ironically, a lot of them got a team because of the book, right? Now, retrospectively. But when the book was written and the whole thing, you know, became the Bible for us all to read as leaders, they weren't managing teams and they weren't going through these types of big decisions. They sat down and wrote a book that felt nice and felt good, and it did feel nice and it felt good. And, you know, to sort of... write a book that says love everybody and cuddle everybody and everybody be nice to each other, it's probably going to be a lot more popular than actually to be a leader. You're probably going to have some brutal fucking conversations, right? And you are going to get crapped all over and things are going to go wrong and this is going to happen and people are going to do this and this is going to happen and here's how you need to react. And you are going to get emails at fucking midnight with resignations from people who are not going to come to work tomorrow. When that happens, don't shoot the shit. Don't get the gun out. Don't do whatever. Like, you've got to do this and this is how you're going to react and blah, blah, blah. Like, because that's morally life of what actually it is to be a leader, that it isn't. You know, like I was laughing, say, you know, people look at my life and they go, oh, it's not all palm trees and sunsets, right? Like it is a lot of times in my head and in my, you know, my kind of internal world, it is. But the day-to-day practical of running a business, oh my goodness, is it not? You know, none of us are immune from the shit that you've got to deal with for being a leader. But I love what you said, and I wrote this down. Move away from thinking about it as a family business. I think you've just nailed it with what you've just said there, in that when we start the business, it's friendly, it's nice, and we're very appreciative of everybody. Any member of staff who wants to work for us, it's like, oh, this is just fantastic. Can you breathe? Yep, you're hired. You've answered the phone before, great. You can sit on the front desk. Oh, you've social media, you like Instagram, great, you're hired. Marketer, thank you very much for taking the job. Any patient, oh, you want to give me some money? Great, I'll take it. Don't care how much, just give me it. Thank you, thank you, thank you, right? And this sort of early appreciation it's just normal. And then after 2 or 3 years, you're like, oh, actually, well, maybe I can't recruit like that anymore. And I do actually need to do a thorough interview process that lasts like a month or whatever. And then prices, oh, I'm barely able to pay my gas and electric right now. Like, I probably need to start raising them a little bit. So I've got to move away from being nice, friendly, natty, and sort of lovable, huggable kind of whoever, to actually, I'm thinking more of myself now as a real business owner. And if I've assumed the title of a business owner, well, I've got to start doing what a business owner does. I've got to recruit properly. I've sure as shit got to make the most important decision in any business, by the way, which is what am I going to charge, which is the least considered decision in most businesses, because there's still the mindset of we're a family business. We want to help everybody, and you know, we want to give away the farm, and we want to be liked and nice and 5-star reviews. And heaven forbid if one person says anything bad about me, it means I'm a bad person and my business will crumble. Well, some of I can guarantee there's people listening to this who need a few bad fucking 5-star, you know, a few bad reviews about the prices being too high. Mm-hmm. And they need a few fucking reviews about the fact that they were told to go somewhere else because this wasn't the type of clinic that solves their problem. Like, mm-hmm. starting to get more specific and more whatever about who they, you know, who they help. But that upgrading of your thinking, I think, is what you're talking about there. In that many people are living a 2022 life with 2015 thinking.
Yeah.
So Natty is a 2022 business owner right now.
Mm-hmm.
But if he was trying to make decisions as a 2016 PT, he'd run into all sorts of problems. Mm-hmm. And I think that is where there's a few thousand people listening to this. That's where many are stuck. Mm-hmm. They're living a life in 2022 practically as a business leader, as a business owner with all sorts of obligations and needs from that business.
Mm-hmm.
But they're still making a decision based upon a belief or a pattern of themselves from 2015, 2016. It's absolutely out of date. What I wrote underneath. Ultimately, you've got to upgrade your thinking to match upgraded goals. I can't have a bigger goal with the same thinking.
Mm-hmm.
If I want a bigger goal to give myself any chance of getting that goal, well, I've probably got to upgrade my thinking as well. And you'll see it in life. You'll see it with people in business, right? I've watched this. People make loads of money in business and they're still like arguing over the price of fucking organic vegetables in the supermarket, right? And they tell themselves it's because they are grounded and they, you know, they value money. It's bollocks, right? They're just not comfortable paying the extra $2, right? Is the truth. So the practical circumstances of their life are very different from the thinking that is now habitual and 5 years out of date, 10 years out of date. It just doesn't match it. And that's where I see a lot of businesses go wrong. And I think you've identified what probably has made you, you know, so successful so quickly, is you've been able to recognize that with a new goal, you've had to develop new thinking.
Yeah. And I mean, just going back, even during the pandemic, we raised our prices by $90 and no one was doing that. And I mean, we get people like, you know, there's a pandemic going on. But because I did that 2 years ago, I can hire the staff that I have now.
Yeah.
Right. If I didn't do it, there's no way I would be able to do this.
Exactly the same thing happening now with inflation, interest rates going up. Everyone's panicking. All the businesses are, what, like, actually, this is the time to raise your prices. You go study any history, any business history. Now is the easiest time on the planet to raise prices. Counterintuitive to how everybody thinks, because everyone's so now in the mindset of everything's rising, there's less objection to it.
Mm-hmm.
Most people were objecting to price rises, right? If you think about it, over the last 12 years, you've had a bull market. You've had prices go through the roof property. There's more money around than ever. Even through COVID, there was more money around, right? And that's that is the problem today, that people have had money for nothing, basically. And in that time, business owners didn't dare raise prices either. And one of the reasons it's actually more difficult in a time where now, is because nobody really raised prices through, nobody talked about prices in good markets. Yeah, there was money around. Now, everybody's having to raise prices and talking about raising prices, whether it's gas or electric or food costs or holidays, whatever, car prices, everything's more expensive. So everybody's talking about everything being more expensive, and therefore it's more psychologically accepted by people when you raise your prices that it's okay, even though the practical circumstances of their financial situation are now negative in comparison to what they were in a good time.
Yeah.
In a good time, they had money, but nobody was talking about it and price rises. Therefore, they're more likely to say no to a price rise in a good time with money around than they are in a bad time when everyone talks about it. We are, as we know, predictably irrational as human beings.
Mm-hmm.
So note for everybody listening, like price rise, it's now the time to do it. It's the golden goose. You've just been given an absolute carte blanche, nailed on opportunity to raise your prices in this period of time. Only the brave will do it, though. That's the difference.
Yeah.
So what else? What about people? Are we allowed to talk? Are we allowed to talk about people? Staff?
I mean, about the people.
Tell us a little bit about that situation, then. Keep it respectful. I mean, if you want, I mean, you don't have to, but keep it respectful. Let's not turn this into Johnny Depp and kind of airing out of dirty laundry in public. But obviously there was a situation not long back where it was just version one had took you so far and you now needed to get over the hump to get to version two. Just give us a little bit of an insight into that, because I think many people listening to this as well have got a team that secretly they probably think, oh, it's not going to be able to take them to that next step. And it will happen to us all in a growth business.
Yeah, just, you know, going back to upgrading my thinking, again, stepping away from the family style kind of restaurant business. And I just knew that, like, for the vision I have, for what I want to accomplish, I would need, you know, more of the people that can, you know, we're always hiring up, right? We want to make sure people coming in can contribute and help us get to our next level. And when you upgrade your team, the first thing that would happen, just like any chemical reaction, you know, there's some sort of mixture that you don't know what's going on, and people get defended, will get really defensive going on. And at that point you have to reassess and you really have to stand firm when it comes to your goal and your standard, and you say, hey, you know what? This doesn't seem like it's going to be a good fit. It doesn't seem like, you know, I feel like this is where our journey kind of end. And, you know, thank you for everything that you've done. I'll write you a great letter of recommendation wherever you go, but I think this is where we should call it quits. And that's why I answer the question that I enjoy firing. I didn't say I enjoy firing, but I'd say I would prefer to fire someone, because I think I'm just doing both of us a favor by saying, hey, this is not working. Even in relationship in the past, I mean, I've been with my wife for like 12 years, and you know, we don't do this thing where like you go on breaks and all of that stuff, because that's not a real thing, right? I've never been a break guy. Like, either you're in or you're out. Yeah. And to me, I'd rather be honest with the person in front of me. I think that's the best thing I can do to honor the respect by being honest to them, say, hey, this is no longer going to work.
Yeah.
So why don't we figure out, you know, your exit strategy, how we can make this a little bit easier on both of us.
How did you know then? Sorry to jump in. How did you know it was time to move to version two? What was going on? What did you have, like a gut feeling, or was there some signs? Like, how did needed to move to Tinder to
again? You said this when I first joined CEO, and I didn't have this problem. I remember when I was like, oh, I don't have those kind of problems. And then you were kind of smirking. You're like, yeah, well, all right, let's see how long that's gonna last. And then when I have my staff problem, you're like, well, it's about damn time you got something. So when I start thinking about the problem I have in bed when I'm next to my wife, then I know it's a real issue. When I literally like stop paying attention to the person in front of me, my family, even my dog, like, you know, that's a real issue, because I didn't create this business to let it run me.
Yeah.
Right. And when it starts consuming me and it makes me more negative, right? Like you say, like I am a pretty fun guy. I take things super lightly. But when it started affecting my demeanor, who I am, then that's got to go.
Yeah.
You know, because at the end of the day, I'm going to pick me over anything.
Yeah.
Right. So it was a hard conversation. Always, you know, I mean, my first fire was not fun. I mean, I was probably shaking for the rest of the day. Yeah. But it was probably one of the best decisions I did, just because afterward, I felt like my business is my business again. There's time where I would walk in and it doesn't feel like it's my business, right? And I wouldn't even want anyone who owned their own business to have that kind of feeling.
Yeah.
Right. So once you know, you have to do it, and you have to do it fast. And it's not easy. But
what about the signs in the office? What about like practical signs? Since we've all got this gut intuition, but what about practical things? Like what was going on that you thought?
So for me, like if I come in and I want to implement some stuff, I lay out, hey, here's what we're trying to do this and this. great, we're going to do it. And then when it's time to do it, like, no one's doing anything.
Yeah.
Right. And when it comes to even implementing scorecards, like, hey, let's meet every 2 weeks. Let's talk about this and that. Oh, this sounds like you're micromanaging. Yeah. So little things like that, you know, like, why are we doing this? Like, we're both adults. You, like, this is what I want to do. You don't want to do it. So I think let's just agree that this is no longer going to work.
Yeah, it's an interesting response that when you get the staff person who says you're micromanaging versus this staff person that says this is amazing. Mm-hmm. You mean I get 45 minutes with you every week to talk, to improve, to develop? It really does tell you immediately who's on your team. And if anybody's listening to this who isn't doing scorecards and you have any doubts over whether or not the people you've hired are on your team, just go in on Monday morning and announce that you'll be starting a regular recorded every other week scorecard conversation and just see how the horse bolts, because that sums up who they are. It really does. And I think that's the difference between a company that grows and a company that doesn't. It's people who are taking responsibility for their own successes rather than the negative, which is you're spying on me, or you don't trust me, or this is just micromanaging. It's like, actually not. And if you really want me to get specific, the difference between micromanaging and managing properly, developing people, micromanagement is about the past and management is about the future. And most of the scorecard conversations are about what's your priorities? What are you working on? Where are you headed? Where are you going? What help from me do you need to get there? It's 90% about the future. It isn't that you didn't do this, you didn't do this, and you didn't do this. There's an obvious conversation that starts within a scorecard. How did last week go? What'd you get up to? Just summarize it. Let's start there. Great. Now what's next? What's your priorities? What are you working on? What help do you need from me? Where are you stuck? What could get in the way of that work in the future being completed? So micromanaging is the past and managing is in the future. And again, most people don't understand that, but they'll bolt very quickly because of the insecurity that comes with, I'm about to be scrutinized here and I don't like this at all. Yeah. This does not feel comfortable. Massive ego. I don't need anybody's help. Again, sadly, the society that we live in, it's going to become harder and harder and harder. And if you're listening to this podcast in 10 years, it is going to be harder and harder to find people who are going to do, you know, what we need to do in business. People, I'm very blessed with some very good staff. And a lot of the work that we put into recruitment, it's like double, triple, quadruple what most people do to get to this point with, you know, with Macy's and Sophie's and Tiffany's and Simon's and Luke and, you know my team, you know, Camilla and Cameron. I could go on and on and on. But there's a lot of work goes into finding these people and kind of working alongside them for a period of time to get them on board. But the way it's going, people don't want to do hard labor. They don't want to do tough projects or tasks, quite simply because they don't have to. They go to, you know, the reality for a business owner, and you might as well face this, the reality of your life and mine is that your staff can walk to the toilet and apply for a job while sitting on it. That wasn't possible 20 years ago. It didn't happen 15 years ago. You didn't realize the possibility that was out there, that the opportunity. The minute you've had an argument with your boss and you don't like him or her, I'm going just going to the toilet, just going for my lunch. Bang, you could have applied for 16 jobs by the time you come back from the freaking from a bathroom break. Right. And that's the brutal reality of where we are. But if you face it and you understand it and you build a team that factors that in a culture that factors that in, and you take your time with recruitment and you find people who have good work ethics and actually take pride in themselves and feel good about achievement and being successful. Those people are still there, by the way. They're getting harder to find. But your job, I believe, as the leader is to ignite that or reignite it within them. And that's where the magic is happening in businesses now with this labor shortage and these issues. It's, as a leader, can you find that person who's got that within them and can you light the shit out of it so that it's, I want this and I do want that scorecard and I do want you to talk to me and I do want you to tell me where I need to improve and listen to this call for me and what did you think about this treatment technique? And that's the companies. You're only going to need it. Everybody else will need 20 staff to achieve what you'll do in 14 staff. When you get people like that around you as well. And that's the other difference.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, just to transition from that version one to version two, I like my rocket analogy. It's like, I'm literally just taking off a huge chunk of the rocket to ascend into the stratosphere, right? It's hard at first, But then once you do it, you just feel so free. Like as a business owner, we're pretty much like salmon swimming upstream already.
Yeah.
And you don't need like a buoy attaching to you to pull you down.
Yeah. There's always something going to hit you. And I think that's the mindset to have. It just, you know, I'm very brutal when I speak about business. It is a war without bullets. Like you are getting slapped every day. You're just waking up every day like, oh, what's it gonna hit me today? Right? Mm-hmm. Not in a way that consumes me negatively, by no means, the complete opposite. Because I expect to get slapped in the face. When I do, inevitably, it doesn't consume me. It's like, whatever. Yeah, all right, cool. Got that one right. Oh, didn't expect that one. Oh, okay. Right, not ideal, but... whereas most people are waking up and it's like, oh, I hope nothing goes wrong today. I hope nothing goes wrong today. And it's like, oh, thank God nothing went wrong today. Let's have a glass of wine. Right, let's do it all again tomorrow. It's like, oh my God, staff member quit. Oh, I didn't see that coming. Really?
Yeah.
Fuck, are you kidding me? Well, like, how are you not seeing this stuff? It just happens, right? And I prefer to start with this is the way it's going to be, and this is the truth about the labor market, and this is the way it's going. Like, the governments are not going to do that much. You can imagine somebody from this political, you know, hocus pocus crap that they love to come out with. Could you imagine running them? Right, I stand for hard work, discipline, accountability. Like, you fuckers, nobody's getting any free handouts anymore. You're all going to have to read books. You're all going to have to do it. Like, could you imagine how many people would make a career out of being a politician, right? And yet that's what the world needs, right? So my point is, the only people who are getting voted now, the ones with the biggest megaphone, are the ones who are making it easy for everybody. Mm-hmm. But easy practically, but it's causing torture internally for people who still can't figure out why all the handouts in the world, all the freebies, all the free lunches, and all of the crap that they get given for nothing still isn't making a jot of difference where it really matters at the internal level. When somebody goes to bed on a night and goes, what a fucking day I've had today. I've achieved this. I nailed this. I've made progress in this area of my life, and I've done this. I'm proud of shit of myself, and I don't give a crap what anybody else thinks. Those kids are still there. Those people are still there, undoubtedly. It's just going to take longer to find them, and it's going to take an extraordinary leader to ignite that. This is how I want to live within them. But if you do it, magic happens in business, because it's all about the people.
Yeah,
it is all about the people. At the end of the day, everything good about your business is because of the people, and everything bad about the business is because of you. Like that's the brutal reality of running a company. If it goes bad, it's your fault. If it goes well, it's the people's. You know, I'm sure you'll have had this already.
Yeah.
You know, people around you will have been like, oh, you're so lucky, you've got great staff. You've got a good business, you've got good staff, right? And it's like, it's always the staff's fault when it's good, right? And then the minute the shit hits the fan, it's like, well, you know, you made a bad decision as a business owner. Like, you got that wrong. So, like, the negative shit is all your fault, and all the good stuff is all the staff's fault. But it's absolutely true.
Yeah, you know, when something's good happening, you point out, right? When something's bad happening, you point inward.
Correct. Right, last couple of questions. Best thing that you've learned? Obviously, you've been around my community for a few years now. You've been involved in the 4% Mastermind and graduated to the CEO program, which you've been a superstar, and hopefully you're applying for the ultimate CEO competition. I'd love to see you on stage. Have you applied? Yeah, yours is in.
Yeah, yeah, yep.
Yeah, the ultimate CEO competition for those listening will take place October 6th, 7th, 8th, and 9th here in Orlando at the big Private Practice Marketer Live Super Conference. Natty will be on stage. And you can hear more from him. He's going to be presenting step by step how he had such a terrific year in the last 12 months at the Ultimate CEO competition. Tickets will go on sale very, very soon for that. What's the most impactful thing you've learned since being around my community over the last few years?
Man, I mean, it's obviously a loaded question. I've learned so much. Obviously, going back, people is how you're going to get everything done. And, you know, and the kind of people that you let in as well, and just knowing your culture. So if I have to walk away with anything, it's obviously knowing yourself, knowing your value. The core value to me this year has been huge, because, you know, it helps me dictate what kind of people I let in to my culture, right? So understand that, you know, if I hold myself to a high standard, I want to hold my company to a high standard as well. So if I'm going to hire people based on my core value, I'm going to train them based on my core values. I'm also going to let them go based on my core values. So just having their strength and the courage to stand firm and creating boundaries around that, it's been a huge lesson for me. Because now if we made a bad hire, we can always go back like, hey, which part of this core value did we miss? What do we let this individual off on? Did they not which box do we miss, right? And like, what do we learn from this? And then on the next one, we can say, okay, seem like they check all the boxes. Yeah. All right, let's see what we have. Let's start training these people.
Love it. What about the CEO? What would be the sort of being involved in the CEO program?
I mean, the CEO has been tremendous for me just to be able to sit in a boardroom kind of style table with other business owner and just being able to, you know, just know you're not alone. I think is huge. Everyone faces the same problem, but just only the matter when, and to be able to call some of these people when I'm having a rough day. I mean, you know, I got to give shout out to Jerry. When I was ready to let go of my first staff, he was there talking to me at 8 a.m, role-playing how the conversation was going to be. So if I didn't have that, I was pacing back and forth. I didn't think I was going to do it, but I ended up doing it just because Jerry was there to help me, you know? and even Tom was talking me through it. He's like, hey man, I've been through it. You'll come out on the other side. To have that kind of community, that kind of support, it goes, you know, beyond anything you can read in a book. You know, to have that kind of comfort knowing that there are people that have been through this before and they have come out on the other side. And even me publishing my first book, it's all because people in the CEO group have did it before.
It's amazing how many people are stuck because they talk to themselves. The only conversation they have is with themselves. And getting around smart people, there isn't a faster way to grow. There isn't a more delightful way to grow. There isn't a less. It's still going to be turbulent. You know, you can't always stop the turbulence hitting you, but you can get over it faster. You can dodge it to a certain degree. You can bypass a little bit of it, but you're still going to be whacked in the face. And it does sure help when you're around people that want to help you on a similar. I used to say that it was always about putting successful people together. And I'm not sure that that's exactly true, actually. And now I've modified it a little to more aspiring people together, because it's very easy to think of yourself as, well, I'm not successful at the minute because I'm stuck. So I'm not one of those crowd. I'm not in that group. I shouldn't be part of a successful group because I'm not successful. I'm stuck. I'm in a challenge right now. I'm in a funk. But if you think of yourself as aspirant, and I have an aspiration to get past this challenge, and I have an aspiration to grow to $1 million in revenue and 80 grand a month, and you know, all of these things, then being around a community of other aspiring people, where chances are you will be hanging around with somebody who's successfully overcome your challenge, I cannot believe there's a faster way to grow. I've just come back from a flight literally late last night from Dallas. Again, fucking delay. Every time I travel, delayed, shit night sleeps. Like, just hate it. I hate it with a passion. Like, I just love where I live. I live in paradise. It's sunny every day. I've got the nicest bed in the world. I wake up with my kids. I live 2 minutes from the office. I've got coffee in my hand within a minute. I never hear traffic. Like, there's nothing. For me to leave celebration is the hardest thing on the planet. But I go because I go looking for one person that I bump into that I can have a conversation with, who understands my problem, who I can connect with for life, shares resources with, becomes a confidant, helps me out when I'm in a bit of a, I'm lost a little. And every time I go to events or I join masterminds or I'm in seminars, that's ultimately what I believe, if you push me on it, has sped up my success. And sounds like it's exactly the same.
Yeah. And I mean, to be truthful with you, I mean, first year when I joined CEO, I had no business being there. My business was so small.
Yeah.
And I just knew that to get to the next level, I need to be able to be next to individual that have done it before me. Right. And then that just gave me some insight to what I have to do next and give me the courage to, you know, to plan ahead and to really take action and execute. Right. So, you know, just being there, it's just helped me change my, like, you know, my mindset was my right here. But when I join after a year, I'm like up here. Right. What's, so I'm constantly upgrading my thinking.
Is my last point on this, and then we'll wrap this up. You just hit the nail on the head, right? Why are you one of the most successful members of the community? Why are you one of the happiest, funnest, most energetic, loved, by the way, by the other members? There's something that, like, everything's cause and effect. If the effect is that, the cause, I believe, is your mindset. And here's what you said there. There's 2,000 or 3,000 people listening to this podcast, right? 2,990 will say, when I'm ready, then I'm joining a mastermind. right? When I'm ready, when I feel successful, then I'll join a mastermind. The successful ones go, I'm joining the mastermind to get successful. I'm not joining CEO when I'm ready. I'm joining CEO to make sure I am ready. See the difference? I hired a guy 8 years ago who cost me at the time, no exaggeration, started at $5,000, went to $8,000 a month, right? To help me start this business. Outsourced consultant, did my Facebook ads and various things. And I found him at an event in New Orleans. I've told this story, you probably heard it. And I'd seen him on stage speaking. And at the end, I said, I need your help. I said, I think I can build this business, this coaching community and blah, blah, blah. I've got all the stuff I need. I've ran my own business. And I think I can do it, but I need your help to learn how to do this. He said, I don't work with you. I can't work with you. I only work with 7-figure businesses. I said, I'll pay you to get me there. How much extra? I literally said, how much extra do you want? I'll pay you to get me there. And it took us about 14 months to get there from scratch, to get to a 7-figure business. But I paid for it. I paid to be part of his community. I paid to be part of his coaching, pick his brains, his expertise, bootstrap the crap out of it with all of my physio business's profits going to this company in Myrtle Beach in North Carolina. My airfares to his events every 3-4 months or whatever it was from England back in the day when I was living there. And that was the difference that made the difference. Everybody else's was, okay, I'll come back when I've got a million. Mine was, I'll pay you to get me there. And that's why I firmly believe you can call the 1% all you fucking want. You can slag them off left, right, and center. But it's got now to do with the practice. In some cases, yes. But most of the time, the practical circumstances are nothing in comparison to the psychological view, how they think about themselves, how they think about opportunity, how they think about what they want and how they're going to get it. And that, in the end, is what makes the difference. That makes the difference.
Yeah, no, I love that. Yeah, because I didn't walk in a CEO. Now I feel like I am one.
Correct. I love it. Absolutely fantastic. You'll be in my soon-to-be-announced fifth CEO group. It's the exclusive invite-only out on a yacht, sailing out of Miami 4 times a year for 8 of us. That's coming soon, Natty. I have to keep giving you something to aspire to.
I know. I love it.
It's coming. It's going to be the super group of all CEO groups. It will be invite only, 2 from each of the 4 we've currently got, to form a super group, like a breakaway group of 8.
Oh my God.
And we'll sail out of Miami, out of.
Will there be a helicopter pad on the yacht?
That's the year after. Like, that's the, yeah. It's coming. I have to keep giving you all something to aspire to. If I didn't, it would go boring. So, well done. Where can people find out more about you? I know you're very active on Instagram. Where can they follow you?
Yeah, you can find me at drdoctor.natty on Instagram. You can find me on Twitter, Dr. Natty, no dot. And I'm mostly on Instagram, so you can reach out and you can follow my clinic at Myokinetics, MyoKinetix on all platforms.
Have you got your own podcast as well?
Yes, the Myokinetic podcast. Yes.
There you go.
Definitely check that out.
Wonderful. I thought this was very professional with all of your microphone and headphones and everything that you've got there. Well done.
Yeah, I'm trying to catch up to Joe Rogan. I just made a Spotify deal.
And we all. And we all. Well done, Natty. I think you're amazing. I honestly, I love you. I think you're amazing. Your enthusiasm for life. I love being around happy people. I love being around successful people, rich people and all that shit. But there's nothing better than being around people with energy. You've got it in abundance. Never lose it and spread it as much as you can. Well done.
Thank you so much. I'll see you in 2 weeks.
You're the best. See you in a couple of weeks. Yes. Thank you. Cheers. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Paul Goff's audio experience. If you're brand new to Paul's world, head on over to paulsmarketingbook.com where you can get started with his number one best-selling marketing book for physical therapists. Or if you've been listening to the show for a while, you like what you hear and you think that you could benefit from this type of help to accelerate the growth and profitability of your practice, reach out to Paul's team at paul@paulgoff.com and tell us exactly what you're looking for. And by the way, if you know someone who would benefit from today's show, please share it with them. And if you've got any questions that you want answered, tweet Paul at the Paul Goff using the hashtag AskPG. You can also find all of these details over in today's show notes. All right, until next time, have a wonderful day.